Our study continues in the 28th chapter of Ezekiel. We've gotten through the first 10 verses. In the first 10 verses, we're talking about the destruction of the king of Tyre. And now, beginning with the 11th verse, we're going to have an account of the lamentation or the bewailment of this destruction of the king of Tyre. Just as the previous chapters talked about the destruction of Tyre itself, and then there was a lamentation given about that, even so, the same is done about the king of Tyre. So beginning with the 11th verse, he's going to describe this king and give the lamentation for him. "Moreover, the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Son of man, take up a lamentation upon the king of Tyrus." Now, this king that reigned during the time that Ezekiel gave this prophecy, and who was reigning when the Babylonians attacked and conquered the city, had the name of Ithbaal or Itobalus. And there is some question as to whether or not this is talking about this one king only, or whether it also includes the entire household, the entire royal family, of a succession of kings that had ruled over Tyre. And it probably would include both. It could be applied to this one king, but it could also be applied to all the kings that had ruled over Tyre. Also, there are some who think that although he mentions the king of Tyre, that he's really talking about the city of Tyre. And here again, the things that happened to the king also happened to the city, so what applies to one does, to a very large extent, apply to the other. There are many things in this passage that are very figurative. He compares this king, for example, to Adam in the Garden of Eden. He compares him to the angels. He compares him to the high priest. And he compares him to Moses going up on the holy mountain of God. So, with a lot of figurative language. A lot of the things that are said about the king also apply to other areas. But it seems that Ezekiel in this prophecy is taking things of God that are well known by the people of God. For example, the case of Adam in the Garden of Eden, the case of the cherubim that would be before the Ark of the Covenant. He's taken these things and he is giving a figurative description then of the king of Tyre. So he says in the verse 12, "Son of man, take up a lamentation upon the king of Tyrus, and say unto him, Thus saith the Lord God, Thou sealest up the sum, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty." So we see here he gives a description of the great splendor of the king of Tyre. Just as in most lamentations or dirges, many things are said about the good qualities of the person about whom the lamentation is given, even so that is done about the king of Tyre. He says, "Thou sealest up the sum, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty." It seems that this king was the epitome of wisdom. He had all of it sealed up. He had the total sum of it in him, wisdom and beauty. So that if a king any place wanted a good example of how a king should be so far as wisdom goes, how a king should be so far as beauty goes, so far as liking the good things and having the good things, then this king of Tyre was a good example of it. You didn't have to look any further for a wise person, for a person who was very knowledgeable. This king of Tyre had it. He sealed up the sum, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. And verse 13 says, "Thou hast been in Eden, the garden of God." So that here he compares him to Adam. He had all the good things. He had a wonderful place to live. He had the delicacies of life, the wonderful foods, and enjoyed good health. He enjoyed the good seasons. And so he's comparing him to have been in Eden in the garden of God. And as we mentioned before, this is very figurative language. None of this is literal, but it's meant to give a description of the greatness of the king, of the true character of the king, and how that God did look down upon him and bless him and bountifully provide for him. And of course, as he provided for him, he provided for the entire nation of Tyre. Now, this probably does include the succession of kings. It goes back to Hiram, the time that he helped Solomon to build the temple, and he had a good relationship with Solomon and David, and had a hand in building the house of God, and consequently, because of that, there's a very good chance that God did smile very favorably upon the king of Tyre, and consequently, he's able to describe him in these very glorious terms. So, thou'st been in Eden, the garden of God. And then he shows not only the wealth, but the terrific splendor this king had. He names here 9 precious stones. Every precious stone was thy covering. That is, he wore them in his clothing. He wore them on his crown. He had them decorating his palace. He was covered with these precious stones. Every precious stone. There was just no precious stone that was left out. He had the ability to obtain anything that he wanted in this along this line. He was a person that was very cosmopolitan. He had all kinds of trade and commercial connections throughout the world, and so he could acquire whatever he wanted in the way of wealth and goods. So he names here the precious stones, the sardis, topaz, and the diamond, the beryl, the onyx, and the jasper, the sapphire, the emerald, and the carbuncle. And then lastly, he says, and gold. So that he, in addition to the precious stones, he had gold. And so we can have to even stretch our imaginations to see the abundance of the effluence that this king had. The workmanship of thy tabrets and of thy pipes was prepared in thee in the day that thou was created. And here he talks about then the instruments of music, the tabrets and the pipes, and the splendor of the workmanship that made them, so that they were probably among the most valuable and the most diverse, as far as their ability to produce sounds would go, in the whole world. And these same were prepared in thee in the day that thou was created. Now, this probably has to do either with his birth, the fact that these were made to celebrate his being born, or they were made to celebrate his coronation as king. And that is more than likely what this has reference to, the fact that his coronation was the time that he was created, the time that he was made king, the time he was put into this power, this position, and so these were created for that. It could even have reference to the fact that these were created for the entire royal family and for the succession of kings, that special musical instruments and the ability to play them and make the sounds were available for this royal family. And so God makes note of that. He makes mention of it as being a part of the glorious trappings that went along with this great king of Tyre. He says in verse 14, thou art the anointed cherub that covereth, and I have set thee so. Here is a comparison to the cherub that would be over the Ark of the Covenant, that covered the Ark with its wings. And there are some who say that since he has seemed to have reference to Adam in the Garden of Eden, that this might also have reference to the cherub that was left there to guard that Garden of Eden. And so the king of Tyre was guarding Tyre like the cherub was guarding the Garden of Eden. That may be stretching the imagery a little bit, but nevertheless it is the view of some. What we're seeing here is that God is comparing him to an anointed cherub, to a being, a creature that is a very high spiritual stature, and he's given the duty of governing over and protecting and acting as a spiritual head of this kingdom of Tyre. And he says, I have set thee so. Tyre was set into this position by God, just like governments and kings of other nations have been set up by God. This is a part of God's plan for how he deals with the world. I've set thee so. So we see that this is according to God's doings. God allowed this to happen. He allowed these blessings to come upon the king. It's God's will. And he says, thou wast up on the holy mountain of God. Here again, he's comparing him to have been either in the temple of God, which was located upon the holy mountain of God, as though he were one of the priests, or he's comparing him to have gone up on the Mount Sinai with Moses, when all of the other house of Israel even was forbidden to go up on the mountain. Only one person could go, and that was Moses. And then we see that Tyre had the great privilege of going up on that mountain figuratively. We're talking about the fact that he'd been so blessed above the other kings, above the other nations, that it was the same with Tyre, so far as the other nations went, as it was with Moses when Moses went upon the holy mountain. So thou wast upon the holy mountain of God, thou hast walked up and down in the midst of the stones of fire. And it seems that the stones of fire would be these great number of precious stones that have been named earlier. The fact that he was in the midst of those, they would shine like fire. And so he walked up and down in the midst of them. He had these stones in abundant splendor. And so they were just a part of him as he went about his daily activities. So God is showing the very great position and characteristics that this king of Tyre had, showing how he had favored him above all the other kings, it seems. And so he was at a very high level, a high position before he fell. But now he's going to begin in the next verse to talk about his fall and the reason for it. So he says in verse 15, thou wast perfect in thy ways from the day that thou wast created till iniquity was found in thee. Now, this is the reason for his fall: iniquity, a sin, displeasure to God, evil. And, of course, as we examine this subject, we see that this is the reason for the fall of everybody. This is the reason for the fall of those angels that this chapter could also be alluding to. This is the reason for the fall of Adam and Eve that this chapter could be alluding to. This is the reason for the fall of Jerusalem and the temple there, and the fact that those priests were cast out of that temple. Iniquity. So, when iniquity was found, then it doesn't matter how perfect he was in the past. It doesn't matter how great he was created. The iniquity then brought about the fall. And so he explains in the next few verses what specifically did happen to this king to bring about this fall, and that he's calling iniquity here. And then he explains what's going to happen to him in the way of punishment. Verse 16, by the multitude of thy merchandise, they have filled the midst of thee with violence, and thou hast sinned. Now, it's the great multitude that this king and this city amassed together. This was the thing that brought about their downfall. It's one of the things. They had used violence. They had used sin. They had no doubt been led into lying and deceit and cheating and no telling what other displeasing actions in the sight of God in order to get more gain, to get more merchandise. And so by these means they had filled the midst of them with the violence, and it was because they wanted the multitude of merchandise. So he says, therefore I will cast thee as a profane out of the mountain of God, and I will destroy thee, O covering cherub, from the midst of the stones of fire. So here we go back to the figure of him being a priest in the temple of God, in the mountain of God. And so he's going to be cast out. He's now counted as profane. He's now counted as one who is not fit to be there, one who is not fit to continue to be a king, a state, a city. And he will be cast out and destroyed. He said, I will destroy the covering cherub. No longer would he be the guardian angel, or the being that would guide and protect and guard this nation of Tyre. He would be destroyed. And he says, O covering cherub from the midst of the stones of fire. He would no longer walk among the precious stones. He would no longer have the glittering crown upon his head. He would no longer be qualified to be the great one here in the presence of God. And so we see not only then that this gathering together of the multitude of merchandise by violence and by sin displeased God, but it brought about the complete fall and destruction of the king of Tyre. Now in the 17th verse, he tells a second reason for his fall, a second thing that was counted as iniquity in this king. Thine heart was lifted up because of thy beauty. Thou hast corrupted thy wisdom by reason of thy brightness. So he had pride. Pride was the thing that is referred to here, and it was one of the chief sins of the king of Tyre. Because of his beauty, because of brightness that he had, then his heart was lifted up and he had corrupted his wisdom. It doesn't matter how wise we are, how intelligent we are, this wisdom and this intelligence can be corrupted if we simply allow ourselves to be lifted up beyond that which we are, if we allow ourselves to have pride, if we allow ourselves to have the wrong attitude about it all, then wisdom is corrupted, and whole thing then is for naught. So pride was one of the qualities that came between this king of Tyre and his existence in the sight of God. God would not allow this to continue any longer. So he says, I will cast thee to the ground. I will lay thee before kings that they may behold thee. So he's going to be brought down. He's going to be brought down to the ground. No longer would he be high and holy in the figurative sense of things, but he was going to be brought down and to the ground. And so it'd be quite a change then, from walking among the glittering stones to being the covering cherub for this nation of Tyre, to being the great, wise, and ever to be looked up to king. He'd be cast to the ground. And this wouldn't be a private thing. This wouldn't be something that he would suffer in indignity of in his own private world. But he would be laid before kings that they may behold thee. So all the world would see what was happening to the king of Tyre. It would be common knowledge as to what happened and to what kind of an end he had, to how inglorious his going out was, and so they could behold thee. Verse 18, Thou hast defiled thy sanctuaries by the multitude of thine iniquities, by the iniquity of thy traffic. So he again alludes here to the sins of the king of Tyre, also alluding to the sins of the nation. Now whatever applied to this king of Tyre also applied to the nation of Tyre, and so what happened to one also happened to the other, and the sins of one also applied then to the other. So thou hast defiled thy sanctuary by the multitude of thine iniquities. Now, this is figurative language, of course, but the thing that God is here calling his sanctuaries would be his reigning authority, his palace, his domain, the thing that he should have been taking care of with integrity and with good moral judgments. He defiled this, and he done it by the multitude of his iniquities, the many sins. He named two. One was the getting of gain with violence, filling the midst of him with violence by the multitude of his merchandise, and the other one was his pride, the fact that his heart was lifted up because of his beauty, and he'd corrupted his wisdom by reason of his brightness. And so let us remember this great principle, that whatever area God has given us to live in, to dwell in, to serve him in, let's not defile our sanctuaries by the multitude of our iniquities. Now that's just all there is to it. Once we defile this, then we become displeasing in the sight of God, and we're no longer counted worthy then to continue to exist in that capacity. And not only was the multitude of thy iniquities, he says, but by the iniquity of thy traffic. His trading in merchandise, the means that he used, the sins that he was involved in the trading of this merchandise, that was another reason then that he had defiled his sanctuary. So he says, Therefore, will I bring forth a fire from the midst of thee, it shall devour thee. And I will bring thee to ashes upon the earth in the sight of all them that behold thee. So here he's referring to the fact that this city is going to be burned down. There's going to be a fire brought forth from the midst of thee, and it's going to devour thee, and I'll bring thee to ashes. And, of course, this is going to be in the sight of all them that behold thee. Everybody's going to see the burning of Tyre, either observe it literally, or are they going to observe it through the account that's given them about it? They're going to know about it. And they're going to know what the end result, the end condition of Tyre is. Now, the purpose of this, as given in verse 19, all they that know thee among the people shall be astonished at thee. Everybody who's acquainted with thee, everybody who's acquainted with your greatness, with your wisdom, with your wealth and your power, they're going to be astonished at thee. It's going to be an amazing thing. It's going to be something to make them sit up and take notice. Now, that's what's happened to you. And as a result, thou shalt be a terror. This is going to be a warning. This is going to be something to make people wonder about their own lives. If it happened to Tyre, it can happen to us. And of course, this is intended even to be a terror for us today. We must not allow ourselves to fall into the same kinds of sins that the king of Tyre was in. Let us not have pride, and let us not get gain by the wrong means. Let us not be involved in any kind of sin in the getting of gain, in the acquiring of merchandise. And the last thing he says, and never shalt thou be any more. I'm going to put an end to you, Tyre. You will never exist like you now exist. You will never be the power that you now are. You will never be the merchandising mart that you now are. You will never be this much involved with all the nations of the world like you are now. You cannot affect the lives of so many people in other nations like you now affect them by your prowess and your ability to make merchandise. And never shalt thou be any more. That is a very stern and a very final statement to make about anybody or anything. Whether it be the king of Tyre, the nation of Tyre, whether it be us, any other institution. This has been brought to pass. This prophecy has never been proven to be wrong. This nation, the city of Tyre, has never been rebuilt in the exact way and place that it was. It is not known today like it was known then. And this is one more indelible proof of the sanctity and of the holiness of God's Word. This is God's Word that we're studying from, and these prophecies, as they came to pass, and we can now demonstrate that they were brought about and were reality, they are proof then that this is the true and living God that's giving this. We're going to close at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying goodbye, friends.